We're going to open the joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Resources for public testimony this afternoon. And we do have Representative Lundquist and I think one of his constituents from more than 100 miles away. Is it? Maybe he's out. Oh, there you are. Yeah. Is your? Okay. No. Need my glass, Representative. Today we are having public testimony on the Oregon Health Plan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us to come testify before you today. I'm here on behalf of the Safety Net Clinic. It's an issue that for rural Oregon is very, very important. And you may recall that last session, I believe, we put $3+ million into the program. It wasn't in the governor's budget, but we found different places to secure those funds, and I'm here today to ask you to give serious consideration to that same kind of endeavor. I have with me Nancy Wilson from Fossil. I don't know how many of you have been to Fossil, but there's a long ways from most anywhere. She's very closely connected with the clinic, and I'll just let her go forward because she can tell you what the story really is.
Okay. Thank you. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Nancy Wilson. I'm the administrator of the Northeast Schuyler County Health District, and Asher Clinic is a part of this district. We're in Fossil and Schuyler County, and today I'm representing the Rural Health Clinics of Oregon regarding financing to prevent the closure of the Safety Net Clinic. Rural health clinics are in medically underserved areas or in health professional shortage areas. Asher Clinic and lots of other clinics are not just rural health clinics. They're called frontier designations. There are 11 counties that have this designation, and that means less than 6 people per square mile. Schuyler County has 0.93 people per square mile. Schuyler County has 1,713 square miles. The population is 1,600. There are 22% of these people are senior citizens. It is the most economically depressed county in the state. 21% of the residents are below poverty level. It is the only county in the state that is above 20%. Unemployment for March of 1999 was 14.1%. The major employers in the county employees, there are 17. There are 14 elected officials. Asher Clinic and Asher Home Health Services, which are under the Northeast Schuyler County Health District, they have 17 employees. Haven House Residential Care Facility, which is just across the street from the clinic, has 14 employees. And the largest private employer is Wright Chevrolet with 7 employees. Asher Clinic is the only medical facility in Wheeler County. It was built in 1975. It is staffed by a physician assistant and a family nurse practitioner. They're on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. The supervising physician is 100 miles away. There are no medical doctors, no dentists, no hospitals in Wheeler County. Asher Clinic sees between 10 and 15 patients per day. 38% of these patients are Medicare patients, 14% are Oregon Health Plan patients, and 17% are uninsured patients. We never close the door on any patient that has inability to pay. We have a satellite clinic in Spray, which is 70 miles round trip, where there are 2 half days per week. The nearest doctor is 140 miles round trip in Madras. The nearest level 2 trauma center is Bend, which is 240 miles round trip. Level 4 hospital in Madras, 140 miles round trip, and a level 4 hospital in the Dalles, 180 miles round trip. Air Life of Oregon serves our area. It's a 90 minutes round trip by helicopter. Emergencies are traumatic. A few weeks ago, we had a little boy, 2-year-old boy, that drank diesel. He was rushed to the Asher Clinic. The emergency room in Bend was called. The physician assistant stabilized his child. AirLife came. AirLife lifted off with the mother and the child. They were in the air 10 minutes. They were called from Condon, and a young girl had been hit by a truck. She went to the Gillam County Medical Center, which is another Frontier clinic. She was stabilized there. AirLife took both children to Bend, and lives were saved. In the last couple months, we've had two heart attacks. Without Asher Clinic being there, the possibility of losing both of those people is very great. Lots of farm accidents, broken limbs, besides acute and chronic patients are seen at Asher Clinic. Asher Clinic funding comes from our trust fund. We get 2% from that. We can only use the interest from the trust fund. Oregon Health Plan, 8%, even though 14% of our patients are Oregon Health Plan patients. Our tax dollars, 15%. Measure 50 cut our tax revenues by 41%. $28,000. Grants, 15%. Medicare, 16%. Even though the number of patients we see is 38% with Medicare. Insurance, 20%. And private pay citizens, 24%. Asher Home Health Services is also under the umbrella of our health district. We have a service area of 60 miles, which is Wheeler, Gillam, and Southeast Washoe County. We have one full-time RN and one part-time RN. The average number of patients seen per month is 20, and all of these patients are Medicare patients. Haven House, which is just across the street, their medical services come from Asher Clinic and Asher Home Health Services. Without these services, Haven House residents would have to be moved out of Wheeler County. There would no longer be a residential care facility in the county at all. Just Monday night, there was a fellow who depleted his oxygen supply, called the clinic, ran at 9:30 at night. We keep oxygen in the clinic. We replaced his oxygen. If we hadn't have been there, Mid-Columbia Healthcare out of the Dalles would have had to driven an hour and a half to deliver that oxygen on Monday evening. Patient revenues cover approximately 70% of the operating costs for rural health clinics. All of these clinics seek funds from donations and grants for both operational and capital projects. Low-income families and retired people are moving to areas like Fossil because of low-cost housing. Many of these families are uninsured, and they do not qualify for the Oregon Health Plan. The Oregon Health Plan reimbursement for safety net clinics has been capitated to prepaid health plans. Direct reimbursement from the state is a set fee. Safety net clinics do not have cost-based reimbursement. These reimbursements fail to cover the actual cost of patient care. Without a health care facility, the stability of our rural frontier communities would collapse and lives would be lost. Safety net clinics support primary care services to the uninsured, the underserved, and unserved geographic areas. It is my hope that funds for the safety net clinic can be reinstated in the budget. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Nancy. Are there any questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I'm concerned also for this. We have a letter of testimony here from Donna Fisher, who wrote a letter to the editor indicating that the legislature has not allocated any funds in the next 2 years. We really haven't started allocating funds actually in certain areas, and this is the legislative program. I believe this would be more favorably said that it's been left out of the governor's budget. And also, I'm very seriously concerned, Representative Lundquist, in light of the amount of money that you suggested for the K-12 program, how do we do some things like this when something like that throws so many of these programs in terrible jeopardy?
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Senator Fisher. It's an appropriate question. The plan that I had for that did not go into the Oregon Health Plan. In two areas that went into the Oregon Health Plan, this was not, neither one of them would cover this area. It was not your very on target. It was not in the governor's budget to my information. So it has been left out of the governor's budget. It was left out of the governor's budget last time as well. And we found, as I indicated in my earlier comments, that we found resources. We just have to make those different priorities, and that's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. Understand that.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
The next thing I'd like to do, I'm looking at a long list of people that have signed up. We've just heard about safety net clinics. It appears to me that there might be a number of you that want to address that issue. What I would like to do is take four more individuals to come up here as a panel if you are here to talk about safety net clinics. And I will hear that panel, and then we will move on to the Oregon Medical Assistance Program, and then come back to safety net clinics after we have actually heard about the Oregon Health Plan. So I would just ask that four of you step forward. I'm not sure you have not actually signed up to safety net clinics, but I do see some people that might be here for that. Nobody's here for that. Okay, come on up. Are there any others that are signed up, for to talk about the safety net clinic? If you're, I would like the safety net clinics addressed right now. And then if we have, if there's an opportunity, and sir, you could come up and just pull up a chair. I think that we can have four. There's one behind there. Okay, and then I would like you to identify yourself for the record, and I'll find you on the list. Yeah, that'd be fine. Thank you, Senator.
Let me start with you. Senator DeCuse, other members of the committee. My name is Mary Lou Henrich. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Care Oregon Health Plan under the Oregon Health Plan. So that's why I kind of hesitated on listing them up now. But our health plan serves Medicaid recipients in Oregon. We have 38,000 members on our plan and serve people throughout the state. We're in 18 of Oregon's 36 counties. 40% of our members live outside the Portland metro area and are receiving care in clinics in northern, eastern, and southern Oregon, many areas that are remote and rural. In many ways, Care Oregon is like all the other health plans serving Medicaid recipients. Where we differ is in the fact that our entire focus is on care of low-income people. 70% of Care Oregon primary care providers work at safety net clinics. So this is where the combination. Care Oregon was formed by a collaboration between the Multnomah County Health Department, which is a major safety net provider in the Portland area, by the Oregon Health Sciences University, statewide safety net hospital, and by the community and migrant health centers in many rural parts of the state. So this means that the physicians and nurse practitioners and providers at the clinics that Care Oregon contracts with serve both Medicaid and the uninsured. In fact, over 50% of the patients that our contracted providers see have no health coverage at all. So where many of the other health plans contract with private provider groups, and Care Oregon does contract with some private provider groups where there aren't safety nets as primary care providers, but the other health plans tend to contract with private physician groups who see Medicaid as the low-income group that they see in their practice. They see commercially insured people, and then they serve Medicaid. Now, with the safety net providers, their preferred insured group of people are the Medicaid folks, and then they have the uninsured people who don't have any revenue at all. So these clinics, when we talk about some of the difficulties, I'm sure you've heard probably ad nauseum from various provider groups, physician groups, hospitals, everyone's saying, geez, we aren't getting enough reimbursement under the Oregon Health Plan, and you can't cut the reimbursement that we get because it's not enough to pay for the patients that we're serving. Our safety net providers, on the other hand, are very grateful to get the payment for those people who have a card, because most of their patients don't have a card that covers them. Those safety net clinics do some Herculean work. Their resolves are strong and their budgets are fragile. If funding for the Oregon Health Plan is cut, which I know that you are considering how to cut back on the Oregon Health Plan, it will directly impact these safety net clinics. As I said, they serve both Medicaid and uninsured. And the Oregon Health Plan reimbursement helps the clinics subsidize the care they provide the uninsured, because not that the money is more than it costs to take care of an Oregon Health Plan patient, but because it helps support the infrastructure just to keep the clinic alive. I think it's the person who just spoke from the Asher Clinic. When you have a mix of patients and most of them are not commercially insured, there isn't some place to cost shift from. And so this line little thing of bringing the balloons. Everybody was like, Mary Lou, what are these balloons? And I thought, well, one of the things that might demonstrate to you kind of how this situation is very difficult to solve might be using this little balloon. And that is that, say down here at this end, somebody is lucky enough right now to be covered by the Oregon Health Plan. And so funding comes from the state legislature to a plan like ours. We then, if that person is through our plan going to be seen out at one of these safety net clinics, this next little spot, then we pay and the money flows into the safety net clinic to cover that patient. Now, when that patient stops being eligible for the Oregon Health Plan, what happens? They don't go away. They are still out in that community with their need. So they're now part of the uninsured part of the safety net. They continue getting their care there. But the safety net clinic doesn't get funding unless there's grant funding, like within the budget last year, or they get it from local funds, from bake sales, from a lot of things that they do to keep their clinics open. But the patient doesn't go away. And so one of my concerns, when you think about ways to save money for the state out throughout the budget, and I know you are really struggling with how to balance this budget, I just want you to remember that if you take away the card from the Oregon Health Plan patient, their need and that patient doesn't go away. And oftentimes, where they go to get the service is in the safety net clinic. And if the safety net clinic doesn't have enough money from the Oregon Health Plan and its other revenues, it's going to go away. And if it goes away, as the woman who just spoke ahead of me, then what happens? Well, in a rural area, it may be a matter of life and death. In an urban area, they will oftentimes go to the hospital emergency room because the hospital has to be open and by law has to see people regardless of their ability to pay in the emergency room. But then what does that do? Here they are now in the emergency room. No funding. So that emergency room and that hospital has to serve them. In order to cover the cost of serving them, the only thing they can do, and they did in the past, and we were stopping with the Oregon Health Plan, it really slowed this down, but it will push up, and the people who can pay down here and who have employer-based insurance, they will then have to have higher insurance rates to cover the cost of the people back here in this emergency room who came in with no coverage. So I guess my little silly thing of the balloon was just to try to show you that no matter where you push it, the person with the need, with the healthcare need, doesn't go away. And we have a variety of places within our healthcare system that are trying to meet that need. And all of us are trying to work better together to become more efficient and more effective. Care Oregon has kept our administrative costs very low. We push most of our money out trying to keep the safety net providers alive so that they can continue to serve not only the OHP clients, but also those 400,000, and I think all of us, including you, I know, are discouraged that we still have 400,000 uninsured people in this state. And the Oregon Health Plan has definitely been a help. The Oregon Health Plan is a good program. The Oregon Health Plan forces us as a state to take a look at what benefit package are we going to provide And I know I've been questioned in other committees about what would I do, cut the benefits, you know, cut the line, move the line, or put people off the plan. And as hard as it is to say, it's kind of Sophie's choice, but I would say that we have to move the line because that's what, and then have the debate in Oregon, can we as citizens of this state live with the decision to not give, if we cut the line up to one of the proposals that's out there to go up to 514, we wouldn't give hearing aids to second graders. We wouldn't treat some treatable cancers. I mean, there's bad things if we move that line. But as an administrator of a health plan, I would rather have you move the line, pay my plan less, and let me have to deal with how we're going to serve the patients, both when they have a card and knowing that the safety net clinics have not been put under. So that's kind of my message, and I have it written down a little more formally for you.
Actually, I would like to make a couple of comments.
Sure.
One, what you just talked about, moving the line, I think actually that was how it was intended to work.
Yeah.
It's what I have read in the legislation and other background materials on the health plan. That's how it was designed. And so that, you know, it's not a new thought. And the recommendation to 514 is actually the governor's. In fact, everything that you see thus far in this budget is the governor's recommend, 544, is the governor's recommended budget. This committee and this chair has not recommended anything yet for the Oregon Health Plan. There was a discussion of $100 million in cuts. It was frankly a number thrown out to work with a work group to try to see where we could make changes. The governor has made changes in the budget and has reduced. Any reductions that you see right now are what the governor has done. So when you say, you know, I plan to make, or this committee or whomever plans to make cuts in the Oregon Health Plan, there may be some reduction in the increase in the health plan. But I just want to set the record straight. It's not this committee or this body yet that it has acted in any way yet on the Oregon Health Plan. So.
And I'm sorry, Chair, if I made it sound like I thought that. I understand that we're responding to the governor's budget, but I know from the work group stuff that there are talks about how can potential cuts be made, and I just want to make the plea that it will be very difficult no matter how you do it.
Okay. Go ahead. And I would like to ask that as much as repeated testimony, that if you can eliminate as much of the repeated testimony as you can.
Senator Qtub and members of the committee. My name is Marge Joseph, and I'm actually a resident of Senate District 4. I live in Tigard, Oregon, but I'm also the director of Neighborhood Health Clinics, which is located in Portland, Oregon. Neighborhood Health Clinics is kind of an odd child out, so what I'm about to say is a little different than many of the safety net clinics that you may hear from. Neighborhood Health Clinics is indeed a community-based nonprofit clinic. We provide medical and dental services, prenatal case management, counseling, and health education. Lucky for us, we have no geographic boundaries. My remarks today are really focused on the medical and dental clinics that we provide. You see, all our clinics at Neighborhood Health Clinics are staffed with volunteers. Volunteer physicians, dentists, physician assistants, nurses, pharmacists, dental assistants, and other medical and dental professionals, along with lay patient intake workers, give of their time in the evenings and on Saturday morning to provide health care services for the uninsured of Portland's metro area. Each week, we have 6 weekly medical clinics, 2 dental clinics, and a Saturday morning pediatric clinic. Our volunteers provide urgency and primary care and health promotion to adults and children who do not qualify for the Oregon Health Plan and who do not have enough financial resources to purchase insurance and or pay for health care services. The Multnomah County Health Department donates space to us. When their staff goes home, we go into the health department in the evening and on Saturday morning. They provide us with supplies, and they provide us with malpractice insurance for our physicians and dentists, If they didn't, we would be out of business. We do no third-party billing. We are not a federally qualified health center. We are simply a clinic who provided 6,200 visits from July 1st of 1997 through December 31st of 1998. You might be wondering, why do hundreds of medical and dental professionals give of their time, and why does county government, Multnomah County Health Department, provide us with such incredible support? In order for you to understand, you need to have some insight into this uninsured population. These uninsured individuals would be here with me this afternoon, but they have one problem. They're working. And if they leave work, they lose pay. They could even lose their jobs. So since they're not here, I want you to walk in my world, in their world, for a few moments. I'd like to take you on a tour of our safety net clinic. It's 7 p.m. on Monday evening. Remember, this population is the working poor. They can't go to medical or dental appointments in the afternoon because all too often they don't have sick time. You're standing in our clinics in Northeast Portland, inner Northeast Portland, or inner Southeast Portland. Those of you who are on this committee, not from Multnomah County, please don't leave my tour. Senator Qtob, over the past 2 years, almost 400 of our patients come from District 5. Representative Strobeck, over 150 of our patients were from District 6. And Representative Wilkins, 75 of our patients came from District 25.
Marge, I'm District 4.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. District 4. And I live in District 4.
I'm sorry. I meant to say District 4.
Okay.
I apologize.
Since I live in your district, I do know that.
Okay.
Sorry. And 400 folks do indeed come from District 4. I know that these are not necessarily high numbers to the three of you, but please understand that we're not close to your districts. Your constituents do indeed drive miles in an urban area to seek affordable health care services. So please, stay with me as we take a look at our waiting room. Remember, it's 7 p.m., and our volunteer providers will see patients until 10 p.m. In our dental clinic, usually it's midnight before our providers call it quits. In our waiting area, there are no lazy Oregonians. On the contrary, they are hard-working residents of our communities. Seated over there is a bank teller making $8 per hour. There are food clerks, cashiers, store clerks, several front lines of local fast food chains. They make $6.50 to $7 per hour. Oh, and over there is someone who is self-employed, your hairstylist, your barber, your mechanic. Mr. Jones works for a large retail store, but the store's medical insurance requires a 12-month waiting period for his insurance kicks in. The woman working at the fast food chain, a major fast food chain, gets offered medical benefits by her employer, but she must pay for them. Mr. Sheridan has employee benefits, but he brought his wife and 14-year-old into the clinic because he can't afford dependent coverage. Together, the Sheridans make $30,000 per year. They have two children. They don't qualify for the Oregon Health Plan. And you may say, well, $30,000 a year, that's not a shabby deal. That's gross, and I mean that in more ways than one. It is not their net take-home pay. Subtract the taxes, take out their rent, their food, their transportation, their clothing. And research has shown us that they have less than $150 per month in discretionary income. If Neighborhood Health Clinics wasn't here as one of the safety net clinics, they would go to an urgency care center, what we called urgency care centers. You would pay between $70 to $100 if you walked in. Plus, then you would pay for laboratory work, x-rays, and medications per person. This family simply does not have enough monthly income to purchase health insurance, which would cost, we made calls here too, between $300 to $400 per month. Those in the waiting area have ear and throat infections, upper respiratory infections, undetected diabetes, urinary tract infections, undetected high blood pressure, undetected breast cancer. They're really no different than the illnesses seen in your doctor's offices. But before we leave my world, let me assure you that it is extremely difficult to get the specialist for the biopsy, the ongoing primary care physician for the newly diagnosed diabetic, or the oral surgeon. Remember, in my world, there is no insurance. You see, my world is a world of working Oregonians. parents working two full-time jobs or several part-time jobs struggling to survive, parents struggling so that their kids could have a better life. We provide these uninsured, fallen between the cracks, residents of our community with a provider visit, laboratory services, and medications. They contribute $10 to our clinic for a medical visit, $25 for a dental visit. On the average, our volunteer dentists provide $300 worth of dental care per patient. That sort of reflects very clearly the need of dental patients in our state. This is my world and their world, and I assure you it is a very fragile world. I know what it was like before the Oregon Health Plan. If you cut the Oregon Health Plan, you will send more uninsured to me in the safety net. Neighborhood health clinics and other clinics like us cannot meet this need. You eliminate dental benefits, we can't fill the gap. If there are no safety net dollars, we will see less patients. Safety net clinics are a part of a comprehensive system of care for all Oregonians. It's not a perfect system. It is a very fragile system. But it is a system that is working. And together, safety net clinics, county health departments, and managed care systems have been fighting a battle to improve the health of all Oregonians, your constituents. We will have wasted precious dollars if we begin to backslide and cut health care benefits. I am not here today to tell you what to do. I am simply here to make sure that you understand what you are doing. The uninsured reside in your district. They travel miles for urgency care, and they work to make lives better for their families, yet they have received relatively little support by the systems that surround them. Please understand this fragile safety net system and that tampering with it does not mean simply eliminating a piece of it to save money. Tampering with it could honestly mean its collapse. I wish that you could walk in the shoes of one uninsured person, one resident of your district, who must live in fear of the day when his wife or child becomes ill and he no longer can access affordable health care services. Recently, we received a call from a woman who had stomach pain and was bleeding. She came into our clinic and she was rushed to Providence Hospital. She was operated on that evening for a tubal pregnancy. Yes, if this safety net clinic was not there because we didn't have the money to operate, she might have died. Every time we turn patients away, and we turn patients away now because we're full in the evening and on Saturday morning, we wonder if they will live, if they will be able to access medical or dental care somewhere else. An untreated tubal pregnancy can kill. An untreated abscess can kill. Untreated diabetes, high blood pressure, and pneumonia can kill. And clinics like ours cannot support more patients. Under the Oregon Health Plan, the traditional managed care players get to do their part. Please do not expect our clinics to do it all. I urge you to protect the Oregon Health Plan and safety net funding. Please send a message to your colleagues and to all Oregonians that the medical and dental health of all residents of our communities will not be on the chopping block. Please promise that you will guarantee for members of the community that they will have a healthy community. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask that the witness keep her testimony to about 5 minutes, please, because we need to hear from everybody in the. We need to try. I don't think we're going to because we have 3 sheets of people signed up and about 10 people on each sheet. So.
Senator Q7, members of the committee, this is very brief. My name is Paige Nosey. I'm the clinic coordinator for Ecumenical Ministries Old Town Clinic, serving the metro area. I'm here today to, on behalf of the clinic and behalf of the population that we serve. Ecumenical Ministries Old Town Clinic provides medical care to individuals in the metro area. The persons served are the homeless, the truly the poorest of the poor. We serve the uninsured, the underinsured, the working poor. We serve migrant populations. We serve high-risk groups such as IV drug users and HIV positive. We, during the 6 months of a six-month period from July 1st, 1998 through December 31st of 1998, we saw 1,791 unduplicated patients for FIN, unduplicated visits. There were 3,517 total patient encounters, and there were 5,218 billable services performed. However, in addition to the medical procedures that were provided, Old Town Clinic provides many more services needed by this patient population. Many of the services provided do not fit into any existing reimbursable diagnosis code. Often, the population that we serve, their poor health is a symptom of their environment. We provide, Old Town Clinic provides, as well as many of the safety net clinics provide, patient advocacy, mental health counseling, alcohol and drug referrals, housing issues, emergency housing issues, transitional housing issues, and hopefully long-term housing issues. We see people, we refer people for their dental needs. Old Town Clinic provides a mailing address for these people so that they can get on the Oregon Health Plan and they can have some place to receive mail. We provide case management. We provide employment training opportunities, referrals for employment training opportunities. We provide nutritional education, HIV education. We provide 70% of all disability claims. The exams come from Old Town Clinic and one other provider in the Portland area. And most of all, we provide a place for these people to check in and to have some sense of stability in their often unstable lives. We also, in 1995, we implemented a tuberculosis program that is now used throughout the area. Every person that needs to stay in a shelter has to come and get a TB test, and they have to have that checked in 6 months, and they get a blue clearance card when they do that. Since this program was implemented in 1995, 90% of all active TB cases have been decreased. With the safety net funds, we are able to continue these services. We are able to continue the TB program, and we are able to continue to serve the population as well as with the Oregon Health Plan. I don't have anything more to say except for I'm here to just make a plea and kind of give you an insight of who we serve and the importance of these people and these funds to them.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Millie Lane, and I'm the Executive Director of Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center. It's one of the larger migrant community health centers, and it's in Cornelius. We have a satellite clinic in McMinnville that services parts of Yamhill County. The clinic is a partner with Care Oregon. We receive capitated funds from them for providing care to Medicaid patients. The task of reducing the OMAP budget is a difficult one, since reduction impacts a person, an individual. This person has a face, a lifestyle, and a future. Seeing that face, understanding that lifestyle, and positively impacting that future should be part of the process of making these budget decisions, since not to do so denies the humanity of those affected. Marge Joseph has tried to give a face to those individuals. I think the piece that's left out is that, and she said it, but I think it needs to be said quite seriously, is that for many of us working in this environment, the people that come to our clinic are working. They pay taxes. They buy goods in the community where they work and live. They are producing members of the society that you're a part of and that you govern. And our ability to keep them working is a part of this process. If my clinic helps with the lower back pain of a strawberry farmer or worker in strawberries, then he's out there picking strawberries. There's good evidence in terms of what this kind of labor brings into Oregon. So I think that this is a part of the picture of the people that you draw a line in the sand, but those are people that are on the other side of the line. And I guess for the rest of the testimony, since I feel your sense of urgency to get through it, and because I recognize that this is not the only part of your job, that at least for this hour and the next hour, that you set aside your concerns about the educational system so that you can clearly hear these words, so that when you go into the next part of your job, you have this piece of information to take with you as you make some of these really difficult decisions.
Actually, I think this committee probably knows better than some of the other committees what we are faced with in making some of these decisions.
And you have a daunting educational task.
That's right. And I'd like to ask each one of you, if you've been to the Education Committee when they have had their hearings on the education budget, maybe you should go put a face on some of the people that reducing the Oregon Health Plan would draw the line in the sand, as you say, because there are a lot of people that do want to fund education, and their idea is to fund it on the back of the Oregon Health Plan. So you, I think, are singing to the choir here. And I just wish that the Education Committee, although they might be frustrated, you know, that you came to them. Just like I'm sort of frustrated because I've heard a lot about safety net clinics. I know they're very important. And I didn't allow the Office of Medical, I didn't allow public testimony earlier a few months ago, just because we had a work group on the Oregon Health Plan, and we have been meeting as stakeholders, or the stakeholders have met to talk about what kind of changes could be made to the Oregon Health Plan to actually continue serving the same populations that they're serving and be able to stretch that dollar further. And that's why we didn't have that testimony. I didn't want the public testimony then. I wanted it now after we had a chance to actually be in those work groups and hear from some of those stakeholders at this point in time. It looked to me like the sign-up sheet had a lot of safety net clinic people here to talk about it, and it's something that you're being very good about your lobbying about, because it's certainly risen to the top. I think everybody's heard about it, and we probably have all had letters and lobbying appointments for it. So I do appreciate you coming and putting a face on who these people are, because I think I probably didn't understand all of the people that are served through this safety net in that arena. So again, I appreciate your coming. I apologize if I seemed a little short at the beginning, but I do want to try to get as many of the people up here to testify as possible.
Madam Chair, as Representative Walker, I have one question, and I'm sorry, I don't recall your
name. Mary Lou Henrich.
Mary Lou, but the lady next to you. And you mentioned the lady with a tubal pregnancy and what would have happened to her if she hadn't been able to come to the safety net. If she had not been able to come to the safety net, what happens to people like that? Do they go to the emergency room and are they cared for?
No, I think most of the time that we automatically assume that people go to their closest emergency department. Mm-hmm. But what is happening is people are hesitant because they know they're going to get a bill.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they're uninsured. I've personally spoken with people who have called us on the phone who have said, and we've been full,
And I've said, you need to go to your closest emergency department. Now, where do you live? And I'll tell you which one it is if you don't know. And they said, I can't. I just finished off paying a bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't go and incur one more emergency department bill. I think we all like to take comfort in the fact that the safety net has a safety net, and that's emergency departments. But that's not how it's playing out. People end up waiting and waiting and waiting, and then they finally get into a safety net clinic much later than they should have, and it's more costly not only for them in terms of their health, but also in terms of our system.
I can understand that, but I was concerned that from the way that you spoke that the safety net for the safety net was no longer there, but I would think it must have to be there, and people probably do make conscious decisions to avoid those expenses, but I think in our country, there's still that last spot they're going to go to is the emergency, and they're going to be taken care of.
Yeah, and I don't know of a patient who's ever been turned away.
Well, the reality is when I'm told by hospitals, they can't turn them away.
Right.
No.
They don't turn them away.
No.
They can't.
But it does drive up
legally to do it.
Right. But it does drive up the cost of care, as you all know.
Well, we understand.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I am going to call up some people that are more than 100 miles. You can stay there, and I'm going to be sure that the people that are 100 miles away come up. Marlon Larson. Ken Parsons, and Barbara Archer, it looks to me like you were here for safety net clinics as well. Is that correct, or is it generally? Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Marlon Larson. I'm administrator of Northwest Dental Service based in Roseburg. And I'll do you a favor, and I won't sing, but I appreciate the chance to talk to the choir at least. And what I'd say to start with is that really I'm against the concept of moving the line, regardless of whose idea or what it is. And been involved with this program for 5 years, and I would remind this committee that in the approval letter from HCFA 2 years ago, they stated, well, don't expect approval to move the line downward again. And that was one of the caveats that they came through when it was cut by 10 or 15 line items from before. Just some background I'd like to give you. 5 years ago, we started and helped organize 32 dentists in Douglas County and got a contract worked out with OMAP and to serve 10,500 Douglas County patients. And many of these were patients who hadn't had access to dental care for really quite some time. And this system has Northwest Dental Service has now grown to 263 dentists, serving 58,436 patients in over 22 Oregon counties, most all of the southern Oregon and most all eastern Oregon counties have dentists who are participating as part of this. And I believe there's quite a credit to the state of Oregon for establishing the Oregon Health Plan. And if you will list the 1,000 or so diagnostic treatment things and consider them, they're really part of physical health or dental health or mental health. And so it was intended to be a program to help underwrite the a health program for many disadvantaged people who for one reason or another are on the lower income levels. However, this has been a very significant factor in reducing the welfare rolls. And I'm sure this has been quantitated to your committee by others, but it's something in the range of 30% decrease for people who are on welfare for just living expense subsidy. Second point I'd make is that that every patient on the Oregon Health Plan selects a primary care physician or dentist. This gives an access to routine care, and this in turn has decreased the emergency room visits. Third point is that we cover these 22 counties of Southern and Eastern Oregon, and with a minimum of 10 to 12 dentists who are always on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for emergency care. And any patient in that Oregon Health Plan system is able to dial an 800 number, 800-655-8151, and they in turn, the answering service will help get a response from a dentist to help resolve their problem in a dentist office, as opposed to them having to go to a hospital emergency room. When I referred to the decrease in emergency room visits, what you've got to consider is that instead of maybe a $50 or $100 charge or something like that in a routine dentist office or even an emergency response to a dentist office, there's $300 to $400 cost to a typical emergency room visit, and then they have no effective treatment for their problem. They'll be given pain medication that'll help get them by for a day or two, and then they'll try to seek getting dental care to treat their fundamental problem. And so in summary, I'd say that two-thirds of the funds to fund the Oregon Health Plan, like adult dental program and the medical program, comes from the federal government in the form of matching funds. So if you decrease the Oregon budget by $30 million, then you also lose $60 million in effective federal funds that will go to some other state or some other program and won't benefit the citizens of Oregon.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Ken Parsons. I'm the general manager of Mercy Flight Air and Ground Ambulance Service out of Medford and represent the Oregon State Ambulance Association as their president also. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you on behalf of the Oregon Health Plan and OMAP budget. Ambulance providers are somewhat in a unique predicament, similar to all health providers. I guess we're part of a safety net, in that we also deal with people in unusual circumstances, in unplanned situations, and our costs are involved prior to actually treating the patient, and we have no idea what our patient is before we get there. Currently, the Oregon Health Plan reimburses ambulances less than a third of their cost of providing the service.
All ambulances?
Yes.
All scripts?
No, ma'am. OMAP is better at providing reimbursement of all trips, all trips that come in under 911. The Oregon Health Plan, some of the HMOs that offer under that, do a much more post-review and disallowing of that service and not paying for it. When they do pay, it's around a third of the costs, and about 30% of them or so they do not pay for. But we've already provided the services by that point. Any cuts to the Oregon Health Plan or the OMAP budget, I'm sure will make the situation worse. You may be aware, Senator Hannon has introduced legislation, Senate Bill, don't get it wrong, 633, with the purpose of having the Oregon Health Plan providers at least enter into arbitration with ambulance providers to establish costs. We're not required to have contracts, or the health plans are not required to have contracts with ambulance providers like they are with other provider groups. There is no consistency in their payments. They pay basically whatever they want, some of them below OMAP rates and some of them above. But with their post-review of the cases, it even changes the picture more. We are required by either county ordinances, state laws, or by our supervising physicians that have control of ambulance services that we do respond on every 911 call, and we do treat every patient, and we transport the vast majority of those. The only real ability we have in not transporting is if a patient tells us they do not want to go. It doesn't matter if they have a severe medical emergency or not. If they wish to go to the hospital, we're pretty much required to transport them. And our costs are already incurred by that time. So I appreciate the opportunity to thank you, or to speak before you today, and thank you for your attention.
Brief question. You say that many of the patients on the Oregon Health Plan you own are paid about a third of your cost. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes, less than a third of our actual costs of providing the service are paid by the Oregon Health Plan.
And since you are a business, is that correct? You're a for-profit business?
No, Mercy Flights is a non-profit ambulance service.
So how do you make up the rest? Do you cost shift to other people, or do you fundraise? How do you make up the two-thirds?
Just various methods. Several of the ambulance providers in the state are public-based and supported by tax bases. A lot of them are private for-profit, and there's some private not-for-profit, similar to ourselves. All of that is done with cost shifting to Medicare recipients. Medicare pays about three times what OMAP does, and to commercial insurers. And that's part of the dilemma we're facing is Medicare is looking at some substantial reductions in their costs and reducing what they pay. So basically the cost shifting will have to get worse, or our ambulance services will suffer.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, then part of your subsidy actually comes from privately insured patients, so those private insurance companies are having to subsidize the cost that we're not willing to pay. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Barbara.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. And the thrust of my testimony is in support of the Oregon Health Plan funding, although I'm a safety net clinic, too, and certainly wouldn't mind support from that area as well. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm executive director of La Clinica del Carino in Hood River, Oregon. The clinic serves about 7,000 patients, many of whom are below 100% of poverty, and 80% of whom are below 200% of poverty. Most are either uninsured on the Oregon Health Plan or are working poor, as was mentioned before. Many are also permanent Hispanic residents of the area and or migrant and seasonal farm workers. I'm here really for two reasons, and the first reason is I was uninsured for over 2 years, so I'm one of the face of the uninsured, that the money that the Oregon Health Plan now funds. During that time, I had the misfortune of incurring emergency room and hospital costs that took me over 5 years to pay off. Now, I was fortunate because I'm a professional and, I'm making a good income, and I was able to make an income during the time I was insured. I just couldn't pay for insurance. I certainly don't want to go there again. It was a very frightening time, and I think that part of my mission in arguing for the support of the Oregon Health Plan is I know what it's like. And it's not always the low income or the indigent that are uninsured. More and more it's those of us sitting in this room. One of three people in the U.S. will be uninsured within the next year. And I look around me and I wonder who it's going to be. Secondly, I'd like to pose briefly two questions. The first question is, do we need to fund the Oregon Health Plan at its current level? Second question is, what's the value to the state of Oregon of funding the Oregon Health Plan at the current level? For La Clinica, for our patients and for our staff, the overwhelming answer to do we need to fund at the current level is yes, for many, many reasons. We have programs and services that are unique to our population that bring them into the clinic and actually get them into health care that are at risk, and we may lose them. More and more, those patients are Oregon Health Plan patients, and we need to provide the special services. Otherwise, they're not able to use health care because they don't understand it. We've reduced our cost per visit dramatically over the last 3 years, so we're trying to do our part to make this whole thing work. during that same time, our reimbursement from all sources has also declined. Unfortunately, our current reimbursement from Oregon Health Plan for above-the-line diagnoses doesn't cover our cost of care. And when you add in the below-the-line services that we provide, our current Oregon Health Plan reimbursement probably covers about 40% of our cost of care. So to reduce that and fund it at a lower level is going to, you know, be a serious strain on us and will probably result in some cuts of some sort. Being a nurse, I hate to see that happen. What we're doing now to make the thing work is we are using cross-subsidization. We do have about 19% private pay patients, and so their higher insurance reimbursement does help us to shift some of that to the cost of care. The other thing that we do is we have a federal subsidy because we are a federally qualified health center. And even though federal regulations say we can't cross-subsidize and we can't support the Oregon Health Plan, that's the only way we make the whole thing work. What's the value to the state of Oregon? Our low birth weight baby rate is 3%, which is way below the state average, and is way below the average of 7.75% that we started out with. Our estimates of savings to the Oregon Health Plan in a year for that difference is over $1 million. And, Mary Lou Hendricks made the point that these people don't go away. They just pop up somewhere else in the system. And so we as Oregonians are paying for that somewhere. The state of Oregon is paying for it somewhere, either in increased insurance premiums that we all pay, including the state of Oregon, or in other ways and other social programs or economic problems that we have to deal with. Diabetes is a serious problem in our population, particularly the Hispanic population. An example of the $10,000 to $20,000 cost savings for one patient in a year is a diabetic who was repeatedly hospitalized until this last year. She's had no hospitalizations in the last 6 months. When we put her into a case management program, what we found out was that she's totally illiterate. She couldn't read the instructions. She couldn't remember the instructions the physician gave her. And she couldn't even read the numbers on the insulin syringe. Working with her family and her 12-year-old granddaughter, she's now under control. She's been under control since we found out what the problem was. And we expect her to stay under control. A healthier life, a contributing member to the state economy. I worry about the economic effects of not funding the Oregon Health Plan. And I also worry about the educational effects. And I think your suggestion of talking to the education people is excellent, and I'll do that. A sick child can't learn. A child that has developmental disabilities because of low birth weight or birth problems probably isn't going to learn. These are burdens on the education system that can be prevented. Economically, there's a tremendous impact on the state's economy and productivity when people aren't able to work. And, I think you can imagine any number of scenarios there. Just in closing, what I'd like to say is that this is a quote from another federally qualified health center in another area that went bankrupt. In a time of economic plenty, there's a desperate need to put together a system for funding health care that takes into account the special financial requirements of community health centers. Healthcare organizations that not only take care of highly vulnerable populations, but that work steadily to do the job more effectively and efficiently. The environment that health center was in when it went bankrupt was one of a booming economy, low unemployment, high uninsurance, and high managed care. It wasn't Oregon, but it certainly feels like California. So I strongly encourage you to support continuation funding of the Oregon Health Plan at the current level. I know that's going to be difficult, and I'll do my part to talk to the education people. I'd ask you to do the same because they're your colleagues. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jackson for the two.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Ron Eichlin. I'm past chair of the Oregon Rural Development Council and also staff at OHSU Office of Rural Health. And I won't preach to the choir, except the chair has to say that you support health care and you support safety net clinics, or last session would not have passed them. I'd like to support safety net clinics within the context of the Oregon Health Plan, and also I won't go over the human aspects that have been stated so well. What I would point out are the economic aspects of supporting health care. Health care, especially in the rural areas, ranks right in the top three industries of all of rural Oregon. It brings in several billion dollars to rural Oregon. And I think that the dollars that you put into the Oregon Health Plan are paid back. They're paid back to you in multiplier effects from anywhere from 1.5 to 3.2. That comes back from transfer payments from out of the area. And I want to make something that I would like to see as a budget note to the Department of Human Resources that makes this point. Under Section 1115, I'll try not to talk bureaucratic language, but in getting the Healthcare Financing Administration to approve the Oregon Health Plan, there was a Section 1115 waiver. In 1954, it was approved, February of 94, and it did away with cost-based reimbursement to rural health clinics, federally qualified health centers. The safety net money coming a couple years later after that is in part due to that portion of the waiver. I think if you understand that, you're not getting match for your Medicaid patients with that waiver, that state money and the safety net money. And I think directing the department to look at that again, time has come by, they've studied the issue, I think it would pay back some of the money that is going to come again through the safety net clinic program. And that's a very, very important point to understand. Not a lot of money, but it's important money because you heard excellent testimony from the presenters, and I would encourage you to ask the department to look at that waiver and its impact on the rural health plan. My last point on this, very important. They're all important, so I guess you have to make a decision which is most important. Washington State looked at Oregon and our Oregon Health Plan with admiration, and they pretty well followed it in a lot of respects. But they looked at the federally qualified health centers and rural health clinics and the fact that the Section 1115 waiver was in it, and they were looking at clinics closing, clinics close to closing, and they said, we don't want this to happen to the citizens of Washington State. So Oregon, my Oregon, I'm a native, was looked at as a model of what not to do in terms of health care for these very fragile safety net clinics. And I would ask you to revisit the Section 1115 waiver and keep this in mind because I'm confident that you will have the wherewithal to fund health care and education in a fair manner. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Bryant.
Doctor, you're on the Ways and Means Committee, and it's your decision. If your decision was to keep the safety net clinics open or lower, or raise, rather, the line on services provided, 20 spots, which do you think would be the best decision?
Well, first, I'm not a doctor, so it's easier for me to answer that. I would say that that Solomon-like choice is difficult to make, and I'm going to ping-pong it back to you because that's why you were elected.
No prayer.
I can't give you expert. If I had the expertise, I would share it with you greatly. But that is why you're elected. That's why you don't sleep at night, I'm sure, sometimes. And that's why you're taking all this testimony, and if you come out as you can, we'll do that. I'm not being too slippery with that, but
no.
It's not intended to be.
Well, I think you're helping because you realize what a difficult question and answer that is, that everyone on this committee is asked to make those types of decisions on a daily basis.
I remember when the line was at, I'll personalize it, Salesians were on the line, and I had a Salesian a couple times, and there's nothing like emphasis when you have a medical problem that doesn't fall within the line. It is a difficult choice, and I think my point is that view this a little more broadly than education and health care, but also the economic aspect of funding health care, you're going to get something back. I'm trying to open that door a little wider so you understand it a little better. If there's a return, immediate return on investing these health care dollars. And I think that's a little different spin than you've heard from some of the other presenters.
Madam Chair, I have to ask, what is that procedure?
Pardon?
Salathium.
Yeah.
What is it?
Maybe I don't want to know.
I didn't hear the question.
What was that that you had done that's not covered anymore?
Salesia.
Oh, the salesia.
What is it?
That's when your eye gets infected, your eyelid, and it's swollen shut, and all that gunk is in.
Oh.
It's painful.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for asking.
Let's see what we're doing.
Okay. Next, I'm going to call up Ian Tim. Gary Braden. Tom Talendeck.
Members, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Ian Tim. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Primary Care Association, and we're an association, a nonprofit association of safety net clinics in Oregon. And one of our main missions is to try and facilitate the survival of the safety net for the purpose of providing access to primary and preventive care to all the residents of Oregon. An overview of the safety net clinics and our membership is that more than half the people who receive care in the safety net clinic are uninsured. And in spite of the best efforts of staff and others to encourage people to apply for the Oregon Health Plan, that's still the situation, that a lot of people are not in the Oregon Health Plan. At the safety net clinic statewide, 75% of the people getting services there are below 100% of the poverty level, and another 20% have incomes between 100 and 200% of the poverty level. And in the past 2 years, the percentage of patients at safety net clinics who are uninsured has been steadily increasing.
Mr. Tim?
No.
We have heard all that before.
Okay. On to the Oregon Health Plan. I believe the Oregon Health Plan has done a great job of providing access for health care, mental health, and dental care for Oregon residents, and that it needs to continue at least providing access to the same number that it is now. The number of low-income families and workers who are uninsured has been increasing, so the need for the Oregon Health Plan subsidized insurance is increasing as well. We believe the prioritization of the services was done well and has been maintained very well. For children and working people, it's extremely important that the covered benefits continue to include mental health and dental services. These are essential to enable kids to continue to go to school and to be ready to learn, and for adults to enable them to meet the attendance requirements of low-income jobs without insurance or to continue training so that they can go back to employment. I've been involved in the actuarial rate-setting meetings for the Oregon Health Plan since before it started. That process has been open. They have done their work based on the best information available at the time. And as you know, it's very difficult to predict the future cost of health services for any group. And that's as it should be. Most people don't want to know what month or year they're going to get cancer or diabetes. So it's inherently difficult to predict the future cost for any population group. A number of the proposals have been considered for reducing the Oregon Health Plan through the study committees and the work groups. And a number of those proposals, if implemented, would threaten the managed care aspects of the plan. And that having the safety net clinics closed, as the last presenter was worried about, would also threaten the ability to continue the managed care aspect of the Oregon Health Plan, because you can't run managed care without a delivery system. And as you heard earlier, the safety net clinic is an essential part of the delivery system, especially in the rural areas of the state, but for the Oregon Health Plan everywhere. And so most of these cost savings in the Oregon Health Plan would have an effect of shifting healthcare costs back onto the safety net clinics, which you've heard can't afford that cost shift, shifting it back onto hospitals, shifting it back onto private insurers and employers. The rate of healthcare inflation in Oregon is one of the lowest in the country. And that's due, in part, maybe primarily, to the Oregon Health Plan and the hard work of many of the providers and healthcare systems that have invested in making the Oregon Health Plan work. It's that work that has kept the high healthcare quality that is in the Oregon Health Plan and the cost reasonable. When people become ill or sick and are suffering, it's human nature to seek relief for that suffering. And it's the responsibility of the health planners and the policymakers to make sure there's a system so that this characteristic of human nature, seeking relief of suffering or illness, that when that relief-seeking behavior occurs, that if they have a place to go that's going to effectively and efficiently respond to that. So if the safety net closes, then as you've discussed, people will seek emergency rooms. And then the costs are that ineffective for most of the conditions, and those costs end up getting shifted back onto the backs of employers, insurers, and everything else. So I think that summarizes my view of the importance of maintaining what we have for the stability of both the school system, but also the economy of Oregon.
Thank you. Mr. Braden.
Thank you very much. I'm Dr. Gary Braden. I'm the Executive Director of Native American Rehabilitation Association in Portland, Oregon. I also am a member of the Oregon Indian Commission, so I know what the glazed look after 3 hours of testimony are like. And I also represent the urban Indians of Portland, which is about 18,000, representing about 250 tribes. And we're most concerned about the eligibility change. It would have a devastating effect on NARA and our Indian community. We have a budget of $3 million, and it would effectively cost us, we would lose about $810,000 annually. And you can see the impact of that on in attempting to continue to provide medical care. We have a medical clinic. We also have an outpatient program for urban Indians, and we have a residential program, 52 beds for Native families from Oregon, and included they're able to bring their children. Presently, we're able to provide mental health and medical within the confines of the residential program with the Oregon Health Plan. What would happen without the Oregon Health Plan, we would have to change who we admit, and we would lose out of that budget about $250,000. And it would mean that we Presently, if you walk down our halls, you'd see a woman with a preemie. We would no longer be able to provide help for her and her child. And believe me, there's no other place for these people to go. And we do take the risk providing treatment to Native women and men and their children. There's no other place to go. And our business is put these families back together in 60 days and send them back to their tribes or respective communities. Without this ability to do that, obviously, they're going to go back to other kinds of, I don't know, and a lot of them will die. One of the other concerns we get excellent detoxing done at Hooper, and it's my understanding without the Oregon Health Plan, we're not going to have that service available, and it's very seamless for us. It's an excellent, we have an excellent relationship with them, and we get excellent care and transfer as soon as they finish treatment. And I don't know what our Indian community is going to do without the detox center available. Any questions?
I have a question, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. It looks as if you're doing a wonderful job. I do have a question. With the advent and success of the Indian casinos, and I know that they really, support many fine causes for the Native Americans, do you have any assistance from them?
No.
Or could you?
No.
Why would that be?
We have put in for grants to them like anyone else and have to go through the system. And we have a grant right now into them to help with the facility costs. But I won't know probably for a year if we're going to get any assistance from them or not. We're not any more likely to get assistance than any other ethnic group. And one of the problems with us is we're not going to get as much media coverage if they give us money as if they give say, a Memorial Hospital, for example. Well,
if I were a reporter, I should cover it.
Thank you.
I really think that's wrong.
I do, too. I think it is. Okay. If there aren't any, I would like to help.
I just have a quick Senator, question. You talked about the eligibility change. And I need to understand more clearly what happens when you postpone access for an alcohol person. Can you put a face on that? What's going to happen? What's it going to cost more money or whatever?
Presently, 90% of the people that access our residential facility are not enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan. With the change, they wouldn't be on it for 6 to 8 weeks, and they would be out of our facility within that amount of time. Consequently, we're just not going to be able to provide mental health or medical support to those folks. At the outpatient program, I don't know what we're going to do because a third of the people who try to access our outpatient program aren't eligible, and I don't know what you do with an outpatient person trying to, at that magic moment, tell them to come back in 6 to 8 weeks. And as you may know, you cannot become eligible for the Oregon Health Plan while you're in jail, and many of the people that access treatment are coming from jail. And so there will be a waiting period of 6 to 8 weeks. Now, I know you're going to hear from the state it's like 3 or 4 weeks. We've never gotten anything sooner than 6 weeks.
Thank you.
Welcome.
All right, thank you. We did hear.
Thanks.
3 to 4 weeks.
Hi, my name is Tom Palandek. I'm a United States Public Health Service Commissioned Officer assigned to the Chamala Health Center dental program. I'm a public health dentist, Indian Health Service. And I'll be very brief, but the Medicaid situation affects us deeply as well, even though we're a federal program. Years ago, our clinics were funded strictly with federal dollars, but that's changed significantly over the years. And throughout the country, as much as maybe 50% or more of our outpatient clinics are supported with Medicaid dollars. Here in Oregon, I don't know the exact figures. I do know at Warm Springs, for example, the dental program. My purpose here is to urge you to support dental care, to continue the dental care for the adult patients. At Warm Springs Indian Health Service Outpatient Dental Clinic, for example, In the last calendar year, they saw approximately 4,500 adult patients. Approximately 60% of those would be eligible for Medicaid reimbursement. That translates to approximately $400,000 to $500,000 that's reimbursed back into the program, which is used to hire additional health care workers, dental care folks, whomever. The same is true for our clinic, although it's a little bit smaller. The Medicaid is extremely important, the reimbursement, because it allows us to hire more folks and eventually treat more people. Indian Health Service Clinics, the dental program of Indian Health Service Clinics across the country, can only see approximately 25 to 30% of the people that need access, and that's it, based on the funding levels that we have. So again, the Medicaid is a very significant part of the budget, and every bit counts. So, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Joan Mailer. Ed Patterson. And Scott Gallen. Good afternoon. John, why don't you go ahead? And I'm sorry to have to ask you to be as brief as you can, particularly if you have written testimony, but.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Joan Mailer. I'm Director of Planning and Government Relations for Providence Health System in Oregon. I'm submitting to you a letter today from John Lee, who is Senior Vice President for Providence in Oregon. We're grateful to be able to be here to again express our strong support of and commitment to the Oregon Health Plan. As a statewide health system that also sponsors a health plan serving almost 40,000 members, Oregon Health Plan members, that is, Providence understands that the Oregon Health Plan is good for patients and good for Oregon. You've already heard some of the vital statistics about the Oregon Health Plan and how it's reduced rates of uninsurance in Oregon and reduced the cost shift of uncompensated care to employers. Providence also knows that the Oregon Health Plan members are healthier and receiving better care than were previous Medicaid recipients. Our own Providence Health Plan statistics demonstrate the success, especially in the areas of preventive care. Although our 98 measures won't be out for another month, I'd like to share a few of our statistics. Our early childhood immunization rate increased more than 5% from 59% in 1996 to 64% in 1997. We still have a long ways to go, but that's an improvement. There's also been a 15% increase in the number of female OHP members aged 21 to 64 who've received CAP tests to screen for cervical cancer, from 64% in 1996 to 80% in 1997. That's a significant improvement in just 1 year. Mm-hmm. Through Providence Beginnings, a care management program for pregnant women, we've been able to identify early barriers to health care and risk factors such as substance abuse and family violence, and to provide help to women and their families, including enrollment in the Oregon Health Plan. Since the start of the Oregon Health Plan, emergency department visits during pregnancy have decreased tenfold, and low birth weight rate has been reduced to 2% below the Oregon average. I'd like to share with you briefly a letter that we received today, graciously from OMAP, from a Providence Health Plan, Oregon Health Plan member. I'll just share a bit of it. It demonstrates really what these statistics mean. She says, "I've received your final notice in regards to the ending of my daughter's medical coverage. This letter is just a thank you for the great help the Oregon Health Plan has done for me and my daughter. At the moment she was covered, I was only working part-time and needed help as far as health, medical health coverage. And without the Oregon Health Plan, I wouldn't have obtained the kind of medical help and treatment that I and my daughter needed. Right now, the Lord has blessed me tremendously, and I'm married with my daughter's father and have gotten a good full-time job with good medical benefits where I and my daughter are covered. OHP made a difference in my life, especially during my labor and delivery, and the times when my daughter would get sick. At first I thought that I won't get the optimum care that we needed because I was part of the low income bracket. But I was wrong, because not only did I get the same fair treatment that others got, but I also had access to preventive services. Indeed, I was satisfied with the care we were getting, and I was very happy with the managed care plan I chose. Also, as an aside, she's now a Providence employee, so we're pleased to have her as an employee as well.
She shows care.
These results could not have been achieved without Oregon's strong commitment to ensuring access to health coverage to all vulnerable Oregonians. And to providing this coverage in an affordable manner, they emphasize preventive care and accountability by providers and plans. Since the implementation of OHP in 1994, Providence has worked each year with OMAP and the other Oregon health plan contractors to make improvements in the program. We believe that additional improvements, primarily in administrative practices, can be made to achieve some further savings in the OHP budget. However, we would respectfully ask that the legislature recognize the tremendous success of the Oregon Health Plan by ensuring adequate funding for the plan. Madam Chairperson, we appreciate the time that you and other members have spent over the last several months on the Oregon Health Plan, including the task force that you convened to review its budget. We look forward to continuing to work with you. Finally, I'd like to just switch hats very briefly and to speak on behalf of Oregon Health Systems in Collaboration. We have the unfortunate acronym of OSIC, but we really are concerned with health and well-being. OSIC members include Providence, Legacy, OHSU, Kaiser, Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield, Adventist Health, Multnomah County, and the Oregon Health Division. And we exist to work together collaboratively to improve the health of our community. As a group, OSIC members share the concerns that you have already heard today from the Safety Net clinics. And we're concerned that, about the ongoing stability of this network to continue to care for those people who are not yet covered through the Oregon Health Plan or other insurance programs. And we urge you to consider in your budget deliberations additional monies to continue to support these clinics.
Oh, well.
Madam.
Oh, Ed.
He yielded to his elders.
Oh, okay.
For the record, Madam Chair, Ed Patterson, representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems and the 63 community hospitals that we represent and the major health systems. I'm going to limit my comments, although I had submitted prepared testimony with some charts and graphs and pretty pictures, and will submit that for the record. But just, I would like to limit my comments to just the Oregon Health Plan and the impact it's had on the Oregon Association of Hospitals and our members. I can't help but pause and reflect perhaps a similar hearing that took place here in this very room 10 years ago in 1989, and as you folks are deliberating where we're at with the Oregon Health Plan today and where we're at with the Medicaid budget, and think back in some of the legislative tussles we've had when back in 1989, instead of having people eligible for Medicaid up to 100% of the federal poverty level, we had people eligible up to 57% of the federal poverty level. Mm. Instead of people, instead of having the number of people we have on the Medicaid program now, we have 150,000. We had 150,000 less people back in 1989, when inpatient stays were limited to like 15 days per year. So, in spite of the tussles you folks have and the difficulties we have of reaching these decisions, there have been some significant improvements made in the last 10 years with the Edmund Murray Health Plan. But your predecessor had some very tough decisions to make 10 years ago, too. Needless to say, our association was one of the very first involved in beginning the deliberations in the 89 legislative session and in support of the Oregon Health Plan, and have worked constantly and consistently in support and improving the Oregon Health Plan since that time. Since it began, the Oregon Health Plan has reduced the number of Oregonians lacking basic health care from 18% without insurance to 11%, including 100,000 previously uninsured children. And I don't think we want to lose sight of the fact that the number of children across this country without insurance has remained stagnant, while in Oregon, the number of children without insurance has been reduced from 21% to just 9% since 1990. The cost shifting has been mentioned. Cost shifting is a big issue with hospitals. Cost shifting of hospital, Medicaid subsidies, charity and bad debts to the private sector health care premiums has been significantly reduced by the Oregon Health Plan. And there has been an increased ability of employers to provide health care coverage to employees.
The Oregon is able to effectively leverage the federal bucks, which I think sometimes we forget about. 3/5 of the cost of the state Medicaid program, including the Oregon Health Plan new eligibles, 3/5 of those dollars are federal dollars, our tax dollars, coming back to the state of Oregon. As a country, the percentage of Americans without basic health insurance is increasing, while the number of Oregonians without basic insurance is decreasing.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
I noted on one of the previous persons testifying that indicated that this was not the case, and I didn't object at the time, but he was stating exactly the opposite, that it was the number of families in Cobalt that did increase in Oregon that did not have some type of a basic plan. I appreciate your testimony because my study does show, or my experience does show, that we definitely are on the forefront of decreasing the amount of people that don't have some type of basic plan.
That's correct, Senator Fisher, in accordance with this. And recent polling was done by the Office of Health Plan Policy and Research. Another important component that's been addressed today has been the use of hospital emergency rooms. Before the plan, people who were not eligible for Medicaid did show up, and not covered by the employers, did show up in hospital emergency rooms. Because the Oregon Health Plan is in effect, hospital emergency rooms, which, by the way, are one of the most expensive settings for health care that you can receive, are no longer the point of entry into the health care system for low-income families. Despite the state's population growth in the last 5 years, hospital association data shows that in 1998, there were 50,000 fewer emergency room visits than there were in 1993, the year before the plan was implemented. Our association maintains a comprehensive financial and utilization database for Oregon hospitals. In our analysis, we also compared Oregon hospitals and our delivery system to the most current national database published by the American Hospital Association. We find that Oregon continues to have the most consistently low indicators for inpatient cost and utilization data of any state in the United States. Our age-adjusted inpatient days per 1,000 population is 51st in the nation, which is 359 days, or 41.8% less than the national average. And Oregon hospitals rank 46th in the nation on age-adjusted expenses per capita, which is nearly 24% below the average cost in the nation. Just a few more points, Madam Chair, just to, I think in this building at least, in the last few months, there have been a lot of comments about providers and how much they take out of the Oregon Health Plan system, and some of that comments have been made not on basis of facts, but I think on basis of impression. Oregon Health Plan Medicaid payments continue to be significantly below hospital cost for providing care, not more. During the period April 1, 97 to March 31, 98, hospital expenses on average equaled 69.4% of their charges. Hospitals were paid 55.6% of the charges from the plan, 65% from Medicare reimbursement, and 76% from the commercial payers. And there are some charts and graphs and attached to my testimony you can view this in. Second point, hospitals have not enjoyed higher profits due to implementation of the Oregon Health Plan. Even though Oregon is a national leader in low-cost hospital care, in 97-98, hospital patient revenues fell short of patient expenses by an average of $44 per hospital stay, compared to a $33 per hospital stay back in 93 and 94 before the plan. Point number three, hospital operating margins have not risen in response to the Oregon Health Plan. Hospital operating margins, which is patient revenues plus other non-operating revenues, in 97-98, averaged 3.7% margin, which is almost unchanged from the 1993-94 average of 3.69%. My fourth and last point, Madam Chair, hospitals have not reaped a windfall due to reduced charity care and bad debts. While hospitals have experienced a $58.7 million reduction in charity care and bad debts between 94 and 98, this reduction has been more than offset by a $280 million increase in discounts negotiated by commercial payers, therefore passing on those savings to the commercial payer of insurance. In closing, Madam Chair, even though the health plan has made great strides in achieving Oregon benchmarks,
Thousands of our youngest citizens are still without basic health care. Cutting millions of dollars from the plan would be devastating to children who have not yet been able to access the plan as that we have to offer. And we cannot stop investing now. Children need to be healthy in order to flourish and take advantage of life's opportunities. We thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. I represent over 6,000 medical doctors and doctors of osteopathy. And I'm not going to make my presentation a debate necessarily about statistical numbers. The Oregon Medical Association has been, from its inception, and continues to be a very strong supporter of the Oregon Health Plan. We have provided members of this committee and members of both houses with information about what we view in both reports that we've done and other independent reports about distribution of resources, but that's really not the issue. This panel, both the House and the Senate, has to make a determination about the priority of resources that you have for the benefit of a large number of constituencies who are asking you probably to spend a lot more money than you'll ever find in this process, and I recognize that. But the Bob Moore polling that we have given to members of this committee in the past, and I have a summary being handed out to you again, was for the purpose of showing decision makers that the Oregon Health Plan is as important as other major budgetary items. And I think that's important to keep in mind. And I know that most of the, all of the committee members here want to be able to adequately fund the Oregon Health Plan to a degree that we continue to be able to provide medical services to those who would not otherwise have access to that. I think that is an important policy decision for this body, for the governor, and for future legislative entities. It is very difficult to make specific decisions on what essentially is a rolling budgetary process. As you all know, there will be a new revenue estimate in the middle part of this month, which may have significant implications for this budget or other budgets. Those are things that you legitimately should and have to take in consideration for any decisions that you might make in the future. We have no objections, obviously, to appropriate management improvements, efficiencies, appropriate residency requirements, et cetera, that meet a reasonable standard test for policymaking. And we'll support those where they are most certainly appropriate once we can determine which issues are legitimately on the table and which issues are not on the table. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just very difficult to respond to specific issues or legislation without actually seeing it. We're committed to work with the committee for adequate funding for patients who are qualified for the Oregon Health Plan, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the information. Very helpful. I'm glad to hear also that in the Providence system, you are able to do what was designed, I think, by the Oregon Health Plan, and that is to help people come in consistently and do preventive care. So, thank you. We are at the bewitching hour. It is 3 o'clock. And I still have some people on this list. It would be my intention to hear what I would like to do is I have been trying to call up a variety of what I thought would be some of the testimony. One particular group I haven't gotten to yet is the folks from Project Equity. I would like at least one person from Project Equity to come up, and I would also like Ellie Jenny. Let's see. And then Jane Meyer, if you would come up. And then I apologize, that we will conclude then with this testimony. So if, as you're coming up, if you would try to be as brief as possible, particularly if you do have written testimony for us.
But wouldn't prefer the quiet of the late.
Madam Chair, my name is Ellie Jenny, for the record. I am a member of Project Equality, but I'm here speaking today for the group Not Dead Yet. And you all have written testimony, so I won't go over that. But my big issue is the funding of assisted suicide on the health plan. The consumers never asked for this. Health plan consumers, we went up to the Health Resources Commission hearing, and I got 5 minutes and got cut short. And Ms. Coombs Lee followed me, and she got hours. And so it's a little annoying that the consumer voice hasn't been heard in the debate of assisted suicide on the health plan. And that's my big protest. I think that's why I'm here. I do appreciate what OMAP says. I think they have great things. I do know I've been harmed by rationed health care. I haven't been helped by it. I mean, it's helped maybe some folks, but it's harmed a lot more. So I just want that voice heard, too.
Thank you, Ellen.
Madam Chair, I need to touch the final bill, and I'll be back to you. I'll stay as long as the rest of the patients.
All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Byers, and I'm staff for Project Equality. I actually started out as a person on Medicaid and left the Medicaid system just before the Oregon Health Plan started, but it's always been the most important issue that I've worked with. I want to make a couple of personal comments. First of all, to say in the early 90s, Oregonians voted to cut property taxes that traditionally would fund schools. And then here again in 96 or 97, we voted to add a cigarette tax to help fund the Oregon Health Plan. Seems clear to me what Oregonians want to support. Remember, the Oregon Health Plan is providing services for working people, families, people with disabilities, and children. And the Oregon Health Plan saves Oregonians millions of dollars in other costs. We've talked about cost shifting and other ways that the Oregon Health Plan saves money. Here's my recommendation for how to use health dollars more efficiently, and that is to make a part of the Oregon Health Plan so that working Oregonians can buy into the Oregon Health Plan. Working Oregonians who can pay premiums and have more ability to pay co-pays, that would spread the risk. More healthy people in the system makes the system cost less. And the more people who are in the system, the less our costs are. I want to actually, I know we were asked to just bring one person from Project Equality, but I did feel like there has been no testimony from consumers, so I invited a member of our steering committee to join me here.
Madam Chair, Senators and Representatives, my name is Rick Berger. I am president of the Oregon Chapter of American Disabled for Attendance Programs today, ADAPT. I am also a member, as Elizabeth noted, of the steering committee of Project Equality. But most importantly, I am one of the consumers of the Oregon Health Plan. I'm here today to tell you that cutting the Oregon health plan in any way will place thousands of Oregonians who already live in poverty in jeopardy. Many suggestions have been made for cutting the Oregon health plan. I have reviewed many of them, and they range from, in my opinion, from ludicrous to just plain mean-spirited. One of these proposals suggests that prior authorizations should be required for ambulance transport. The reasoning behind this proposal is that many persons are abusing this service by getting joyrides, quote, joyrides to the hospital, unquote.
Mr. Berger?
Yeah.
Who is it that proposed that?
This, I saw this in a memo that came out of the work group meeting.
It was a questionnaire, and it was a concern that was brought up. Nobody has proposed it. The question was asked, would you support doing this?
Okay,
so I would like to correct the characterization that anybody has proposed this.
Mm-hmm. Well, then in that case, you can consider my answering that questionnaire. And as I said, and I'm quoting from that memo, which I contained the questionnaire, joyrides to the hospital.
No, that was not in the questionnaire.
Did you get a copy of it?
I have a copy of it in my file, and I would be happy to give it to you. It was from our work group.
Mm-hmm.
We would never have said joyrides. The word joyride was never brought up in a work session. Maybe somebody who got the questionnaire made a new one and editorialized themselves. I'm sorry, but I just think that this committee or anybody, any provider, is saying behind people's backs that they're taking joyrides and that I would put that in writing is absurd.
Nonetheless, the suggestion has been made. Whether
it, no, it has not been made.
It has been made. Yeah. Okay, I'll go on to the next. Well, if I can, then. However, the fact is that HMOs in Oregon will not pay for transport that they do not consider emergencies already. So this would really have no effect in terms of cutting costs. If there is a problem in this area, the solution is not to bring in prior authorizations, it's to adequately fund other transportation alternatives. Prior authorization, for instance, is not only an unworkable concept, it is downright life-threatening. Another proposal that has been talked about is to raise the line on the prioritized list from 574 to 515 or 514. Not only do I consider this mean-spirited in that many treatable cancers are in the proposed range of conditions, it's also illegal. I myself, other Project Equality advocates, and several other advocates who are here in this room today, had a meeting exactly 1 week ago with Sharon Donovan, who is from Region 10 Healthcare Financing Administration office in Seattle. Ms. Donovan informed us at that meeting that HCFO would not agree to any raising of the cutoff line in the prioritized list. And I have several witnesses here who were in the same room when she said this. So I'm making that statement with good knowledge of accuracy.
I would just, I'm going to clarify what the issue with the line, bringing the line up.
Mm-hmm.
We asked Legislative Fiscal to do a fiscal analysis of what cutting to any level brought in dollars.
I understand that.
That's why. There,
but I think also that the committee deserves to know what a representative of HCFO said in regard to this issue.
That,
and I am reporting accurately what a representative from the Healthcare Financing Administration told us in regard to the question of raising the line.
And that was?
That they would not permit it.
Right. Okay, Madam Chair, for the benefit of the subcommittee members, the question that Legislative Fiscal got was, how far would you have to go up the line to save $40 million? And the answer was,
line 515. There was no suggestion, however, that anyone was going to apply to go to line 515. That was simply the line that was in response to how far you would have to go, if that were the means for doing it. Just clarify.
And again, it's the governor who has suggested, as of right now, in his budget, to move the line up, and HCFA will be contacted for that.
Be that as it may, I do think it's important that the committee knows what a representative of HCFA had to say on the subject.
We have the director of OMAP that has told us that on several occasions about the willingness of HCFA to cooperate with our waiver, which is supposed to allow us to raise the line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we gain anything by saying he said, she said, and bringing rumors like that, but I think that we need to just really stick to the focus.
Well,
what
if these things are spoken about are rumors, I appreciate your clarifying that, because this has threatened many people who are consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You may view this as simply discussing options and finding out what people think. When we see things like this, it tends to make our blood pressures rise. And then we have to go get a referral from our primary care physicians to take care of that. Another thing that has been talked about is changing rules in durable medical equipment to tighten that up. Once again, I am simply saying this is something that has been put forth by many people. I am not pointing the finger at any one person here, okay? I'm here. I've got a very nice, brand-new wheelchair I just took delivery of last week. It's much better than what I've had before, in that it properly fits me, and therefore puts me less likely in a position to suffer skin breakdowns and ulcers. It took me since last June to get this chair. I started the process of needing a power chair at that time, and in doing so, I've gone through several loaners that my health care provider got to me in lieu of getting the chair. But I had to go, I had to yell loud, I had to yell clearly. And you may think that that's not a whole lot of time to wait for something like this. I'm an advocate and I know the system fairly well. So I actually probably got this faster than most consumers would. You can imagine what it would be like for the average consumer who does not have a great knowledge of the rules and procedures involved in getting durable medical equipment. So what I'm saying is it's already hard enough to get durable medical equipment. I don't think you're really going to save money by tightening the regulations. All you're going to do is put a lot of people into more suffering in terms of not getting what they need. Over and over again, one of the things, once again, I'm not pointing fingers here. Over and over again, I've heard, as a reason for making these cuts is that there is too much fraud. My opinion is that this is simply not the case. There are no welfare kings or queens riding around in Lincolns or Cadillacs spending off on the health plan. As important as the Oregon Health Plan is to those of us who have low incomes, it is far from being the best care money can buy. Anybody who can afford to drive a Cadillac and uses the Oregon Health Plan to cover their medical expenses, in my opinion, needs to have their head examined. And that's all I have to say here.
I think what we hopefully will be doing is setting the pocket so that they don't take advantage of it. Rick, what I would like from you, since you have put on the public record that you have a memo that states that some joyriding was done, I would like a copy of that memo, because I'm going to find out who put it out.
I can get you a copy.
Because I don't appreciate the kind of rumors and the raising your blood pressure, because frankly it raises mine too, because it simply is not true.
Mm-hmm.
What you have been given and the idea is to get people all frightened and well, hysterical.
That's the idea. They're doing a very good job of it.
It may be the idea, so that they can get people like you to come and say that we're doing ludicrous things and, you know, accusing us of wanting to take people like you off of the health plan, which is not the case at all.
I'm not actually worried that much about my being taken off the health plan. As I said, I'm an advocate, and I know the system fairly well.
But well,
a lot of people out there who don't. And if I may use if I may use an antidote to compare the situation, and
actually,
I find it to be the case quite a bit from Social Security, through Medicare, through the Oregon Health Plan, is there's a tendency to tell people, no, they can't get something, and then assuming that they're probably going to believe what you have to say and then go away and not pursue their rights.
This
is a very common bureaucratic tactic.
Okay.
Oh, and
I'm not real familiar with the system, so I don't know if that is a common bureaucratic tactic. But what I would like from you, Mr. Berger, is a copy of that memo and any information that you got in writing so that I can find out where it came from, so that I can go to those people, whomever they are, who
mm-hmm.
put this information out and give them some better information.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Have you... did any communication with the governor or the governor's staff over these issues?
I have been in touch. I have been in contact with people at DHR regarding this issue and have let them know what's going on. I sent several letters to the governor on general issues involving human resources in the state and have received no response from the governor.
Do you think you're different than we are? This bothers me, and it's what I said before to the representative who was in here.
Mm-hmm.
When you're off pursuing pie-in-the-sky figures and bartering one agency of government off against other agencies of government or other needs of government, and doing it for a political reason to try to get more money out of the taxpayers' pocket, it's insufferable to me that we have to come here and be browbeat over a situation that we're trying our best to eliminate and work with when we're not getting any help from that third member of the triumvirate of government. And it would make me very happy if you were putting the same testimony in as to the governor's unwillingness apparently to shut down and use the money that we have reasonably.
Well, you can certainly talk to Mr. Weeks, Gary Weeks, the Department of Human Resources, and he will certainly tell you that I've been a constant bug in his ear.
Actually, he's not talking about the fourth branch of government. He's talking about the third branch, which is the governor.
Okay. Yeah, and if I may respond to you're talking about playing one group off against the other, I think that's exactly what's being done to the poor people in the state, in that we are being forced into competing with education to get the services we need. Wouldn't you say that's the case?
Madam Chair, that's exactly my point, and who's doing it?
And that was a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Jane?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jane Myers. I represent the Oregon Dental Association, which represents about 75% of the dentists practicing in Oregon. And we do support, pardon me, we do support the Oregon Health Plan, and we're particularly concerned that the funding for adult dental services be maintained. And we've got written testimony from the association. I just wanted to point out two things. One is that one of the real benefits of the Oregon Health Plan is that for possibly the first time, a lot of adults have a dentist who is their dentist of record they've been in to see. So on Friday afternoon or Friday evening, when they have a toothache, they have someone to call, which keeps them from going to the emergency room. I gave you a copy of a study. There's some evidence of what has been done in Maryland, where they eliminated adult dental care from their Medicaid recipients, and when they did that, they kept track of the hospital emergency room visits, and it increased the visits for Medicaid recipients for dental care by almost 22% in the period they were looking at. So we just want you to know that it does also keep down the cost of the hospital emergency room by providing dental care to some of the population who don't seek dental care until they have an emergency. So we would hope you would continue to support the Oregon Health Plan and the adult dental part of it. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Walton.
I might mention that, and maybe Mr. Berger might hear me. The first time that I have been in my life under a plan that provided me dental care, or optical care, if you need that, was with the state of Oregon. And, you know, I think our Oregon Health Plan is doing a pretty fabulous job. And if you're out there, you know, I may not have to use the health plan. If I ever did, I think it would probably be one of the best insurance coverages I've ever had, bar none.
Yeah. With that, we will conclude our public testimony for today. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you tomorrow. Is it Wednesday? Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow at 1.
Yes.
Okay.